Tap into the passion and vision of well-known entertainment luminaries with Thinking Out Loud. Go on a journey with unfiltered access to today's media innovators. Hear their strategy for rising above the crowded landscape. Important lessons and valuable wisdom that only comes from real industry experience.
Hello, I'm Vicki Lins, President and CEO of CTAM, a marketing organization focused on the media entertainment technology industry. Today, I'm speaking with Rebecca Glashow, CEO, Global Distribution for BBC Studios, where she has responsibility for BBC Studios' global distribution portfolio. So lots of interesting things to discuss today. Rebecca, welcome, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Vicki. I'm so happy to be here chatting with you today.
This is fun because our paths have crossed in different ways across the years and in the different iterations of our careers. And so it's really fun to be coming back together with you today to talk about what's somewhat of a new role for you. You're less than a year in your CEO global role, and I want to dive into that. But before I do, I thought it might be useful for you to explain to us what is BBC Studios, so our listeners have some context for the conversation we're going to have today.
Absolutely. And I reiterate, it's really nice to reconnect with you and reconnect with the CTAM organization who I've been involved with over the years. And many of us are in this industry because we love the people and we love the connections we make. So really happy to be here with you today. I'd love to explain BBC Studios to you and your listeners. Think about it in the sense that BBC Public Service is the public service that everybody knows, a 100-year-old institution in the UK, started with radio, really delivering news and audio and entertainment programming around the world since its origin, publicly funded by the people of the UK. What Studios is the commercial arm of that business. So we are taking some of the incredible content, whether it be audio and video, and taking it around the world in the form of channels. So think BBC America and in North America, in the form of content sales. So think of Bluey that might be on Disney Plus, and in the form of digital products. So think about bbcnews.com. And that's our role. We deliver commercial growth, and that's a dividend that's then paid back to the public service. So we were formerly known as BBC Worldwide. So that might be something that some of your listeners have heard before. And we rebranded to Studios a couple of years ago.
That's really helpful, I think, for a lot of folks, because the BBC brand is quite prolific and there are lots of different businesses that fall under the BBC Studios umbrella, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I did mention congratulations to you because you were recently promoted into your global role. And I'm really curious to hear what insights you may have to offer about what you've observed in looking at the landscape through this new global lens versus previously when you were responsible for the US, Canada, Latin American market. What do you see differently? What else do you see? Where are the big challenges and opportunities in this new global landscape?
I would say, first and foremost, we're in the content business, and I will bring it back to us, you know, being around for 100 years in the sense that we've always been producing content, you know, that has been funded by the people for the people that we've taken around the world. And we've seen great content resonate, whether that be scripted dramas or documentary, and really resonate around the world. And so I think in some ways, we've been in the business that so many of us are in now, which is delivering hit shows across streaming services to people around the world. But I think there's nuances in that. And having been on the ground in many markets for a long time and built brands and built services, it's not one size fits all. So some of the big things that I've seen in this role is, and I think many of us often talk about this and know this, is the trends in market moves faster here in North America in a lot of ways. So you might see that with the channel business, right? And the decline in the pay TV market, which has been, one might say rapid, many ways not. It's been taking place over decades, but you are seeing that acceleration of streaming taking that over. That's not necessarily the case in EMEA and other markets where pay TV came into the market under variously different circumstances where you might have had a lot of free to air. So pay TV has a very different makeup and it's really intact because the choice that it gave people has remained the same, or the the price point that they get it at is very different, for example, in what they get in North America, or the choices might be more limited, right? And it still provides a lot of value. So one is, it is not one size fits all, I should say, rather, in the global business or the global trends. You know, a lot of the audience behaviors that we see here are different when you look closely in other markets. I think the other thing to note is that content travels. And I think we are seeing that when you see hits that might have originated in Korea, originated in Spain, really resonate everywhere, which is great. Content does travel. And by, in some ways, taking down the tram lines between markets, that you can really see hit creative resonate everywhere and not let borders stop that. So in some cases, I see market differences in sort of how the business has evolved. But in some ways, I see the trend of content wins, right, really remaining intact.
So there's a yin and a yang in there. And one interesting one is that content travels and borders are coming down. I'm watching more international content than at any point in my life. And I've actually always been a passionate fan who sought it out before it was so readily available. So there's that aspect. The other aspect, however, is the cultural nuances that you mentioned and the differences. And so can you explain to a little bit to us about how does that play out when content is traveling across borders, but you are also trying to create content that will resonate with very different cultures and communities of viewers around the world?
I think it is a bit of the shift from the mass to really servicing, and I don't want to say niche because you're talking about big audiences, right? Or audiences have yet to discover the content because it's not been readily available. But I think it's the move away from trying to serve this mass audience because you're trying to drive ad sales and ratings, but really about delivering a story that's going to resonate. Because the BBC is not ad funded, and because the BBC never had that same external pressure, right, of ratings and advertising or the syndication market of driving 22 episodes so that you had enough content to send into the syndication market, it really did always, in some ways, prioritize, you know, the story. You know, how many episodes did it take to make it? You know, am I telling a story that hasn't been heard before? Am I serving an audience that hasn't been reached before? And I think that's the model you're starting to see with global streamers is, yes, there are a few things that we all might connect to. Maybe if for you, it's superheroes, but for the most of us, we want different stories. And I think what you're seeing is that there are, especially in things like the scripted space in particular, or documentary, and two areas we play around a lot in, you want more accessibility to stories that were not out there previously because it was about servicing mass audiences.
Your company sells, what, 1,500 plus shows into the market?
Yes.
I mean, that truly is just, you know, it's inspiring and overwhelming, the breadth of content that you're putting out there. And I would imagine that there's an increasing demand given how, you know, the entertainment companies are all moving into direct-to-consumer models and looking for more content to bulk their libraries. So what's the supply-demand equation look like from your perspective?
Well, let me explain that a little bit. As I was hinting at before, our genres are that we really are known for and what we take around the world are scripted dramas, as I touched on, and then factual and natural history and science, which is really, from my perspective, a category that the BBC really owns. It's what we've been doing under the banner of the Natural History Unit for decades. And that's patient programming, really, to do what we've done in the natural history space. And I remember when Planet Earth launched in this country and it just rocked, you know, it rocked audiences everywhere. And we've continued to do that most recently with Frozen Planet, is really creating programming. And again, this is about, yes, of course, servicing audiences, but not always entirely driven by the immediate short-term commercial imperative, right? It's the stories that really take time and patience. So we've got this category of content that is a lot of our breadth, the science unit, which is something that I don't think any other organization can say they're committed to and committed to delivering on. So it's across those genres as well as kids and comedy. So, you know, we create a lot of programming because we are not only creating programming for multiple channels in the public service, but then we're also creating content that is getting commissioned, you know, directly by platforms and streamers. We are an enormous studio, you know, we have quite a lot of size, and I would say there's quite a lot of demand. And in large part, it is what I've touched on, Vicky, which is we've always been about creating content for global audiences. It's also because we have a reputation for delivering high quality content into the marketplace. We're trusted. We deliver it. We deliver it on budget. You know what you're going to get. You have the brand attribution that is really impactful. Audiences care and know it's a certain quality if it comes from the BBC. So it's never really been a better time to be a content producer as the market does become more vertically integrated and competitive, to be a supplier of content at our level. Not everyone's going to win in this game, right? But I certainly would place my bet on the BBC.
You used a really interesting term when you said patience. And that's not a word that we hear in our industry very often. You used it in the context of, you know, Planet Earth and Frozen Planet and the time it takes to produce that type of programming. But I believe you've talked about it in a different context too, in terms of the investment your company makes and the commitment to quality storytelling. And so could you elaborate a little bit on the patience that's required for the BBC studios to deliver the work that you do?
Yeah, and I would say on a personal level, this is definitely something that really draws me to the BBC, is the importance of the quality of the programming they're putting into the market. And that's across every genre. I think is our editorial standards and our expectation of what we're putting out there. I've never seen a company that sort of holds itself to such a high standard. And, you know, there's a reason, you know, you're around for 100 years for sure. And so I just say that from a personal level, you know, I am quite proud to be here talking about this content. And the reason I bring up the patience is to really deliver a natural history program. It takes years. One would argue not the same as a superhero movie. It's not going to deliver that return, but it delivers a value that we feel has to be done, right? And that's a little bit of the public service imperative of ultimately feeling we're committed to programming that has true value and stories that have to be told. But it is the long game. And it is partially because we have great partners around the world that take this content from us. And we've in partnerships with now Warner Discovery with a lot of our natural history content. And we've had great partners the same around the world in other countries who really support us on that journey and have that patience alongside us. To me, if we weren't committed to that programming, I don't know who else in the market would be.
So you just used another interesting term, partners. Why are strategic partnerships so integral to BBC Studios' future? And talk to us a little bit about the different types of partnerships you have, because this is deep in your organization and part of the key to the success of the organization.
Yeah, well, I will be blunt here. It's because content is expensive. Prices have risen in content over the years dramatically in producing high quality content, competing for content, competing for talent. Obviously, now you've got the implications of COVID and what that does to productions. So, you know, content's expensive and high quality content is expensive. And the BBC, for large scale investments, needs to partner to deliver and to compete at that level. And to service the world, it really needs to bring partners in at an early stage. So we do a lot of business in co-production, where we are early on partnering with other platforms, the likes of which I've mentioned already, to create this IP where we're servicing both our audiences in the UK with it, and then streamers such as whether it be Warner Discovery or Disney Plus are delivering it to their audiences. And that's been part of our DNA and history for decades because of the way our business is set up. And we've got a long history of sort of shared results out of that.
So I was doing some reading about, you know, all the news that's covering BBC Studios getting prepared for our conversation today. And recently the decision was made to move one of your shows from ABC to Disney Plus. And I bet some of our listeners will be surprised to hear that you produce Dancing with the Stars, not something that would typically come to mind when you think of the BBC, BBC Studios brand. So that's interesting. But also in a conversation you had with someone else, you said that it was a joint discussion and decision. And that was interesting to me because typically people in distribution roles are not involved in the later discussions about what happens to the shows. So could you walk us through that a little bit and just elaborate on what that type of partnership looks like? Because what an interesting decision. And it's also equally interesting that it was a joint decision.
Strictly Come Dancing is the format in the UK of Dancing with the Stars. That format is around the world in various countries. And in this one, it's Dancing with the Stars. And it is always very interesting sitting in this market, sitting outside the UK. Strictly Come Dancing is a wild hit for the BBC and has been for quite some time. But it is our IP. And so it makes it a partnership, right? I think part of the fact that it's been around with ABC and now with Disney Plus for so long is how we've partnered together to really maintain the quality of the show over these decades. And it is. I mean, we want that show, both of us, to be alive and well for decades to come. There's not that many hits like that show anymore that continue to deliver that audience. And it is a mutual decision. I think that is a testament to the caliber of partnerships that we've have over the many decades of working with US platforms. It also helps us grow other business together, right? Because you tend to come back to those same people that are delivering you things editorially that work, delivering you the audiences that you want. And I think what you'll see with a lot of the partners that we've been in business over the decades with is they know what they will get from the BBC, right? And it delivers. And I do think that is an important component. It's a tricky business. It's hard to deliver hits. It's hard to deliver audience. Production's complicated, right? You want to know who you're in business with and the standards in which they're going to work at. And I think that's in large part sort of our reputation and our experience in particular, you know, in working with a lot of the big US channels and streaming platforms.
I think this is such an important conversation to be having. I mean, from my view at CTM, it's fascinating how this industry has evolved and how, you know, evolving business models started to pull people apart. And for a while, everyone was scurrying into their respective corners to figure out the what's new, what's next paradigm. And it really sort of weakened the equity and strength of the we're all in it together mentality that was always such a driver of our industry and our business. And what I'm seeing now is a resurgence of that we're all in this together. Every competitor is also a colleague. And we're really all simultaneously trying to figure out what that new and that next looks like, but doing it together benefits each individual business in so many ways, one of which you just beautifully described. And so I think this is a really critical conversation for the industry to be having. I certainly believe it's a critical role for CTAM to be playing too, because it's one of the only places where people still come together and sit around the same table to figure things out.
Well, I want to jump in there because I couldn't agree with you more. And I'll say two things. This is a real fundamental shift in consumer behavior, in commercial value and return. It is unprecedented times in our country in general, you know, with all the external factors. And we kind of have to figure this out. We have to compete, yes, but we know that there's a pie there. We have to sort of figure out that path together. I will also say, though, Vicky, BBC in some ways gets to be a neutral player in this market on that front because we're UK-based, perhaps because we're not in the public markets, we get to, I think, more easily partner. There's less suspicion of our objectives. And in a way, I think, I don't want to say that makes it easier for us, but I certainly think it makes us feel truly like a partner versus a competitor.
So you mentioned brand. Let's shift gears a little bit because the BBC brand is huge. because it's grounded in public service, trusted, which we all know is so important to brand equity, value, and impact. You've got a lot of different BBC businesses under that bigger, broad BBC brand, obviously the commercial business being BBC Studios, but you earlier mentioned BBC America. We've talked a little bit about BBC Earth. There are others, and there are some non-BBC branded businesses that you're engaged in too, like BritBox. So talk to us a little bit about the House of Brands, how that works, and where the equity lies.
Well, I'll start with the last. The equity lies in the BBC. We are an incredibly globally recognized brand, and I will say that from having barely put a dollar behind it, you know, having just been delivering content, whether it be through news, through television, through PBS, through Discovery, through, you know, our partners around the world, we are a known brand. However, our imperative has not been historically about building a brand. It's been about delivering commercial return back to the public service. It's about getting our content to the right platforms with the right windowing and the maximum amount of commercial return. And we're not alone in that. And I think the teams have been brilliant over the years in navigating. And again, this is differs via market, but I'll emphasize North America for the moment. But, you know, our roots into the markets tend to be a combination of channels and content sales and more recently, digital services. And I would say, as we all, as organizations, move more and more into a direct relationship with the consumer, and we have that most directly, of course, with BBCnews.com, is how do we simplify that for the consumer? How do we make accessing the BBC a more clear path? I think, you know, what we, I don't want to say struggle with, but have to balance is the BBC means different things to different people. Some of our consumers might say, it's the news, it's the news. So how do we make the news much more accessible to them, right? But so many will say, it's documentary, it's documentary. So where do I have to go to get that? And for others, it's, of course, you know, premium drama, or it might be something they don't even know belongs to us, right? Because it's sat under a banner of another brand. So I think that is a complexity that we're wrestling with in real time, right? We've done an incredible job of building our business. How do we now focus also on super serving our consumer and our audiences and taking away that friction? But I think that's a journey that many of us are on at the moment.
So, related question, BritBox is 50% owned by BBC, not branded that way. Do you see either a benefit or a deficit to having it stand separately under a different name and brand with consumers? Do you think the fact that it's partially BBC backed actually helps bring consumers to it? What does that consumer interaction and impact look like in that space?
I say this because I did not do it. It was brilliant what the team did 5 years ago in launching BritBox. And I do not underestimate the task of launching a service outside the UK market at that time in that place. And I think the thought at the time was, of course, we need as much access to content as possible, right, to be competitive. And by pooling together our incredible content as well as ITV's, we have the greatest chance of success. So it was absolutely the right decision. Because remember, although we do have all those content hours that you mentioned, many of them are committed elsewhere, right? So it couldn't be everything goes into that. We've got long-term partnerships and relationships, as we just discussed. So it was really about delivering real value from top UK, you know, production producers into that service. And it's been incredibly successful for us. I think haven't released anything past 2.4 million subscribers, but I can tell you it continues to grow. And we've been really happy with that service. BritBox has been an incredible successful service for us in this market. As we look at what is happening across the portfolio around consolidation, I think all of us have to consider, you know, what's the best way to really super serve the audience and fans.
So I think where I'm going with this is also some of the complexities that you mentioned when talking about this space and in trying to super serve audiences. You know, the distribution landscape, the partnerships, the agreements, the decisions is really messy these days, much more so than it's been in the past. Windowing is challenging. When things move over to streaming is challenging. You've got all these different pressures on the business now. And, you know, very often the deals get in the way of the customer experience, which leads to friction that was never intended, right? And this frustration of how do I find what I want to watch and where is it? And from your perspective, how do you go about trying to ensure the smoothest customer experience to super serve your audience? And what is your perspective on the distribution partnerships to ensure that that can happen?
I think that's a great question. We have to remind ourselves that many of us, and our and studios included, is both in the business of delivering brands and channels into the market, which we do, as well as creating content for ourselves and others. And many of the studios have always been in that business, right? Both, you know, in some cases, creating content for themselves. And you've seen that over the decades, big hits that may come out of one studio is really fueling another channel outside of their portfolio's primetime lineup. So that's been going on forever. And it's no different what you're seeing now with people taking what becomes a hit show and it being on a competitive service, right? So it's very difficult to be a purist, right? The economics don't line up to be that right now. And especially, certainly not for the smaller services. So, you know, we will definitely be in the business of producing and production for hire for the marketplace, because it's, as I've said earlier, it's a competitive service. We have huge production capabilities and we can deliver hit shows as well as creating the shows for ourselves. And I think what I would nuance is, and it's not so dissimilar, you know, in the cable universe, there's different channels with different ethos, with different audiences that come because they were understood or was the program that spoke to them. And, you know, talk about BritBox, that has a very distinct audience. And they come for a certain kind of content and they come religiously, right? And not all of our content belongs there for that audience, right? Because it is not a mass play. It is not a broadcast for everyone, right? It's delivering for a very specific engaged audience. And so in some ways, and I think about BBC Studios, we are broad. We do serve a lot of different audiences. We do cut across a lot of different genres. You know, you can either put that all in one place and hope it shows up, or you can balance that into the marketplace through partnerships, other platforms, but then really deliver on the audience that you think you can win on. And I think in some ways that game was always the game, right? As you saw so many people with multiple channels serving multiple audiences. And I think the expectation that we'll put it all in one place, I think is, first of all, the economics don't support that. But second of all, it's not yet proven that that's what the consumer wants.
Do you see the pendulum swinging back? I guess I'm not asking about BBC Studios as much as I am just in general. You know, right now, bigger is better and more is what everybody's going after. And these streaming services are trying to bulk up their libraries. Do you see the pendulum swinging back to some degree to the less is more approach? And
I think people want to be understood, right? They want to be gotten. They want to know what they're getting. And we have so little time, so much choice. How do we remove the friction? Well, when you turn on the service, you see what you want. And I do think, listen, there's a reason the cable business was intact for so many years, right? It really did deliver brands that served audiences, right? There's a million channels in that lineup I never used, but I have those channels and those brands that I come back to. And in a sense, people have different expectations and they want to be served in different ways. And I do believe there's an element, and that's why you're seeing so many successful niche services that are just pure and delivering on what the audience expectation is. So I do think it's swinging back. I just find one size fits all has never really worked in this business.
I think the role of brand has evolved differently too, because to your point, the cable network brands were so strong and you knew what to expect from each one of those channels. And then the more is more approach took over and there was a diminishment in the level of understanding of what you were going to get. You know, everybody had everything. And so where do you go to find anything? I think there's been a rise in the brand value of program brands and franchises. And perhaps BBC gets lumped into that because something that has the BBC brand attached to it definitely stands for something, even though there's such a breadth of diversity of programming that you develop. Are you seeing that program identities, program brands are drawing audiences and increasing the importance of that in the marketplace?
I think it's a navigator for our audiences. It is a trust and a stamp of approval for us, for sure. And I think people want those shortcuts to, you know, watch this. And I think brands can help in that regard. Or I know what that means, or I know that what that represents, or I know what sits behind it, right? That's another element of it. People expect a certain level of transparency from their brands or knowing what they are about, what they stand for, especially as you think about this new generation of viewers, Gen X. And so I do really think it matters, right? And it doesn't always, it doesn't mean something no one's ever heard of might not break out and people all gravitate towards. It's not always IP and brand. But I think we'd be silly to think that that doesn't play a role in really helping the consumer, whether it be navigate or spend more time with, because the brand associated with it is familiar to them.
I really like the phrase you just used, brand as navigator. That's great. Okay, I'm going to shift gears again. Operationally, what do your global operation challenges look like in running a business as diverse and vast as you do?
Well, one... I'm laughing, actually, Vicky, because I keep talking about editorial standards and what we hold ourselves to. And I'm laughing because one of them is compliance, right? I'm not really joking. Is, you know, we have real expectation of what needs to be, of what content we're putting out into the market. And I would say what the operational challenges is really is not bottlenecking ourselves, right? Yes, we want to hold ourselves to high standards and have total editorial control and make sure we are absolutely representing our brand effectively in every show or every product that we put out in the market. But, you know, that also can be a bottleneck, right? Not everybody runs that way. And some businesses, you know, decision making or editorial control is really delegated across the organization. But here we really hold that to be sort of one of the most critical elements of what keeps us, you know, back to the brand conversation, what keeps it consistent for consumers. So I'd say that can be difficult in running a global business that is originated primarily out of one market. I think it also goes back to the one size fits all, right? What might resonate around a show in the UK that's on a channel that everybody sees and everybody knows and you don't have to market might need a different narrative or story or connective tissue and how we position it or market it or talk about it or sell it. So this goes back to the beginning of our conversation is, yes, you can have content that resonates around the world, but what might be resonating it might be different, right? What that connective tissue is. So I'd say the other challenge is just how do you effectively market, promote, sell something in other markets without being completely inefficient, right? And customizing everything.
So it's interesting because we're talking about the discipline required to, you know, to drive the business to success. But flexibility is also crucial in today's industry. And we hear this so often. What does flexibility look like from your perspective?
You know, part of it is different behaviors and different styles. And what I'm going to say about that here is, you know, I was brought into the business 2.5 years ago, having spent the majority of my career in US media at adjacent companies, and I have a lot of interactions with the BBC over the years, but very different style, digital first businesses. And that was intentional. I sit at the executive committee of the company and I'm, you know, I push change and I've made a lot of changes in the organization and the people that I've brought in roles underneath me. And in large part of that, it is is an organization being open for change and open to do things differently. And I'd say, you know, that starts in some ways with people.
It's interesting how successful leaders often start and end with people, and a people-centric model most often proves to be a strong formula for success.
I would say, I absolutely agree with you about people. And I think the BBC, although around for 100 years, is not afraid to change. I say that from the perspective I've seen the change in sort of how do we continue to grow this brand and grow internationally while obviously preserving what we have in the UK is a nuanced ambition and challenge.
So change is good, and change leadership is important, and you've clearly demonstrated that. Let's wrap by having you share just a couple thoughts about what changes are coming, either within your business or do you see in the broader landscape?
I think one is really putting people first. We talked a little bit about people and culture before, and I am going to start with people because these are really unprecedented times. And I think it is really important that we understand that our people are a reflection of our business. We are servicing younger audiences. We are delivering content on different platforms. We are navigating through very different times, as we hit on earlier. And I think people is the most pivotal asset we have, and getting that right, right? And getting the balance of how we work, how we collaborate is imperative. And I spend an enormous amount of time on that, right? COVID changed our behaviors, and we would be silly if we didn't acknowledge that that changes how we do business, right? So I'd say in one case, it's how do we continue to do what we do in different ways? And I've seen a lot of great behavior and a lot of change come out of very dark times, obviously with COVID. So I say people is very important to me. And then the other would be the ability to pivot and change, right? It is okay to place some bets and then be wrong. We talk about this a lot here. If you wait to get it right, you will have missed it. You have got to keep moving and keep pushing the business and not wait to get all your steps in line. And I think I've seen, certainly that's where I push in this organization. And I think we all acknowledge that, as we said earlier, there is no roadmap here. We've got to just be brave.
I love that. And I don't think there's a better message to end on than be brave. So thank you for taking the time to speak with us today and for sharing so much of your experience and your insight with us. I have had such a blast reconnecting with you, and I'm looking forward to more.
Thanks, Vicki. This was so fun. Thanks again for having me.
Hope you found this Thinking Out Loud conversation interesting and perhaps even thought-provoking. There are more on the way. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.